Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining Dr. Perletta Ramos and Roz Shell in Living Life Powerfully. We help you turn the ordinary into the extraordinary by claiming your power, getting your heart in the game, and learning how to live from the inside out. Let's create more happiness and success in your life.
Hello there. Thank you for joining us. I'm starting off this show with a question. Are you happy? My guess is the answer to this question will depend on a host of different things, like how you feel in this very moment. If you had an argument with your spouse or significant other, whether or not you're having financial problems, or what's the state of your health. And most importantly, if you're feeling the presence of stress in your life, each one of these things can impact your current state of happiness. And whether or not you're managing stress particularly well at any moment can be a determining factor in whether you can experience joy in the moment. Most Americans, whether you know it or not, rate happiness as being very important. In fact, the pursuit of happiness is so important to us in this country that it's woven into our culture. There are thousands of books, guides, journals, magazines, websites, blogs on happiness. And these resources discuss it in any number of different ways. They talk about happiness related to relationships, to marriage, to children, to health and career. There's research out there on neuroscience, the neuroscience of happiness, and how you can increase happiness in your daily lives. You've probably heard or seen a few movies on happiness, like Hairspray or Happy-Go-Lucky. One of my favorites is Pursuit of Happiness. And you may have also read a ton of magazine articles on the subject, because everybody wants to give advice on happiness, and Raj and I are no different. No, I'm kidding. We're not going to give you advice. We're just going to talk a little bit about happiness today. But professionals and novices alike offer a plethora of different proactive strategies, because happiness is very important to most of us, actually. We all want to feel good about our daily experiences and life. There are two things we want to point out in terms of the concerns with our preoccupation of happiness before we go into talking more about how we can experience greater joy and well-being in our lives. The two problems that I see are, first, that there's a preoccupation or expectation that we should feel happy or be happy all the time. Like, achieving the state of happiness is some goal, and if we're happy all the time, that means we're successful. And if we're not happy all the time, it means that we're not successful, right? So, like, this having a goal is somewhat like wanting to lose 10 pounds, and we're perpetually pursuing happiness, which can also actually cause unhappiness, because if we don't measure up to this expectation that we have these joy-filled, happy moments every day, that we're somehow missing the mark and not being successful in our lives. So that's the first thing.
You know, Perletta, like when I think of the pursuit of happiness, it's like the dog chasing its own tail. You know how it'll just go around and around, and it mm-hmm. just never can seem to catch it. So I think for most people, the way that they view happiness, it's almost like it's like the absence of pain or any discontent. That's what it is, right? So either they're happy or they're discontent, and then they keep chasing that tail, like the dog chases the tail. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like even the happiness that they think that they feel is always very short-lived. So is it possible that maybe we need to look at a different definition of what happiness is, the way that we think about it? Because I bet you if we asked 10 different people, I bet you they'd give us a different definition. I bet each one would give their own definition of what it is.
Well, we're actually going to talk about definitions in just a second, Raj, which is wonderful. But I wanted to complete my thought about the two problems that we have. One you're alluding to, which is, or elaborating on, which is this idea of chasing, you know, the tail. And when we're chasing anything, right, that's what can cause frustration and exhaustion, really. The second piece of it is the focus on external factors, and I alluded to this in the introduction a little earlier, you know, when we're focused on relationships and or money or this idea of what success is, all of those things are outside of ourselves. And when we focus on these external things that are that we look to as causing happiness in our lives, so if we have more money or a nicer house or great relationships or we're married or we're contemplating marriage and in a great, you know, partnership, then we're happy. And then the absence of those things, quite often, if we don't have those things, we feel unhappy. And when we focus on those two, the things that we've just discussed, it can actually cause us to be unhappy. So let's get to the point that you just raised, Raj, regarding what is the definition of happiness.
Uh-huh.
Well, sometimes oftentimes we view happiness as just an emotion, right? It is
uh-huh.
how we feel in the moment. Do we feel joyful and elated in the moment? The common definition used by Webster's definition of happiness is joy and delight or even elation that occurs because something made us happy. But there are other definitions, as you alluded to. In the social science research context, there are actually several definitions of happiness. And one that I find useful in understanding happiness is it's a state of being where you feel peace and experience balance between what we want, you know, our desires and wishes on one hand and the surrounding, how we are in the world on the other hand. So it, from that definition of happiness, it's a much more balanced perspective of, you know, our internal versus our external. Now, how often do you think that happens, Raj, where we look at happiness from this place of balance?
I don't think that happens very often, actually. it's interesting, Perletta. Okay, so I was in a 28-year marriage, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I got divorced about, it'll be almost 7 years. And people ask me, well, are you really happy now? And my point is, was I really, like, was I unhappy all the time while I was married and now I'm not married, so now I should be happy? I don't really, you know, think of it like that. For me, just, I think I'm more at peace. I think I'm more, I'm more true to myself. You know,
mm-hmm.
there's like a sense of peace around it. So for me, and this may not be true for anyone else, but for me, happiness, and really, I think sometimes we get those two things mixed up, happiness and peace. We may be looking for peace to be able to accept what is, and yet we, like you said, you know, it's the internal versus the external, and yet we somehow identify our happiness with that. Outwardly things that are just out
mm-hmm.
there. Let's say we get a new car or, you know, or somebody, you know, is nice to us or somebody gives us a gift and we're really excited and happy for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, does that bring us long-lasting peace?
Well, I think one of the most challenging things in relationship people is this expectation that they're going to make us happy. So it's curious to me in a way that someone asked you, oh, 7 years later, are you happy now? As if it were
uh-huh.
your ex-husband's responsibility to make you happy. And I'm sure you'd say
exactly.
the answer to that is no. Yeah, it was not uh-huh. his responsibility. But we do that all the time. We want someone else to fill up our
uh-huh.
cup because our cup feels a little empty sometimes. And
uh-huh.
so this question about being balanced is, I think, a very powerful question because I believe the reality is sometimes we're in balance with our feeling happy with our internal state and our external state, but more often than not, it's a dance. We're constantly striving to achieve this balance, you know, of feeling good about who we are and how we're being in the world and what our external circumstances are. And this constant striving for balance is really the dance of life. And if we're not careful, when we get out of balance, either expecting someone or something outside of ourselves to fill us up, that's what can cause stress because situations outside of ourselves truly can't do that. Or if they do, it's temporary, right? So for this reason,
this expectation and desire for a perpetual state of happiness can be unrealistic and stressful in and of itself. And there's another way, and that's what we want to talk about for the bulk of our conversation. What is that other way? And why do I say there's another way? Well, because these feelings of happiness are just that. They're feelings or emotions. And we have to, I think if we have the long-standing peace that you mentioned or alluded to earlier, Raj, we have to cultivate feelings that are sustainable within ourselves. You know, the title of our show is Living Life Powerfully. And from a happiness perspective, living life powerfully means obtaining that sense of peace and happiness and well-being that's centered mostly in five, creating that space within ourselves to develop and nurture a spirit of wellness comes from within. And when we're able to cultivate that sense of happiness, being where we are, loving ourselves more, you know, being in community with ourselves first and then with others, there are a host of things we're going to talk about very, very specifically. When we're able to cultivate those, our experience of joy and peace can transcend whatever external circumstances we're experiencing. So I prefer the term, actually, well-being to happiness. In social science research, happiness and well-being are oftentimes used interchangeably. As a matter of fact, this is the subject of my dissertation research. I studied attorney well-being in the practice of law. And what I loved about that is it's tied to a childhood experience. When I was a little girl, I would say about 8 or 10 years old, I didn't have an idea that I wanted to be anything in terms of a career. But what I longed for was to be happy. And I imagined happiness as just feelings of playfulness. That's what happiness means to me, just feeling internally playful and joyful. And what I learned about the research is, just like there are so many definitions of happiness, there are many definitions of well-being. And what I appreciate about well-being is it's a broader context that extends beyond the momentary feeling of elation that we talked about that's normally associated with happiness. There's a psychologist and researcher called Carolyn Riff, and she developed a psychological well-being scale that measures well-being among six factors. And these six factors do two things. First, they focus on the highest human good involving virtue, right? And then secondly, they help people to realize their potential as human beings. So there's a depth to the experience of well-being or well-beingness that doesn't really extend itself to happiness because of the fleeting nature of happiness. And what are these six factors? I'm going to name them, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about them. But the six are self-acceptance, positive relations with others, autonomy, environmental mastery, purpose in life, and personal growth. So we're going to start with the first one, and that being self-acceptance. What does that mean? When you hear self-acceptance, Raj, what does that mean to you?
Oh, wow. Self-acceptance is being, it reminds me of that unconditional love. It's total unconditional love for what is, for who you are, for all aspects of yourself, for however you are. Best way that I can put it is that unconditional positive regard for who you are. Not only who you are, but even your potential and all mm-hmm. the mistakes that you've made, and I don't consider anything as a mistake. I just consider everything as a learning experience. So to me, self-acceptance just means unconditional positive regard for yourself and all aspects of yourself.
Well put, Ms. Raj. In fact, the research suggests that when we feel a self-love and acceptance of who we are, we actually score higher on well-being tests. Why is that? Because we're not judging ourselves. You know, most people identify with the statement that I am my worst critic. So if you're in your head criticizing who you are, how you feel, what you do, it stands to reason that you're not going to probably feel good, right? You're not going to have a high well-being score because you're your worst critic. So this idea about cultivating self-acceptance, you know, loving yourself, how and it's not, you know, people say all the time, oh, I love myself. And that's, I'm not saying that's not true. That's true. But there's a deeper experience that we can have about truly loving things we like about ourselves and things we don't. Like just accepting, like you said, a positive self-regard, accepting it doesn't mean that you don't want to evolve it or change it, but it does mean we don't criticize and have self-loathing, right? And we all can be hard on ourselves. I was having a conversation with a friend this past weekend, and she was contemplating coloring her hair because she's going gray and she's in her mid-50s. And I posed the question about, you know, how can you look in the mirror and find satisfaction no matter what you see? You know, this idea of being balanced with accepting what you accepting and loving you yourself as you're aging and working towards the goal of being healthy. You know, how do you balance that? So this idea of accepting what you see in the mirror, loving what you see, cultivating a deeper connection with yourself is what self-acceptance and experiencing greater love and compassion for yourself is all about. The second prong of the test that Carolyn Rift developed was positive relationships with others. This relates to your ability to love, trust, and establish deep relationships. Now, we all know we're social animals on some contexts, but some people have really deep connections and community, and those people actually tend to score higher on well-being tests because they, you know, in the interaction with other people, you're able to connect and experience yourself in a different way when you're in relationship with others. So this, there's both the emotional, social connection, and it's nice to be noticed and be seen in the context of your relationships with others. So the social research is overwhelming that developing and maintaining positive relationships with other people contributes to a heightened sense of well-being. The third is a step or a factor is autonomy. This is actually one of my favorites. I believe we long to have a sense of freedom. I know I do in my life. So, and when I say autonomy, it's a focus on inward self-determination, independence, and an internal locus of control, meaning, you know, you feel like you walk your walk and talk your talk. You know, that there's a piece of authenticity that you and I talked about before, Raj. This is one of the most significant traits because on our show, one of the things that we focus on is living from the inside out, and that's what autonomy is all about. It relates to your ability to truly dance to your own music, to sing your own song, and independently to charter your own boat. And, which is quite, I think, quite lovely. It's one of the most important things to me. It's living my life my way. And when you're doing that, sometimes in the context of having relationships with others, it can be really challenging, right? Because, you know, we've all heard of group think. So there's that idea of being balanced again and being truly yourself and being with others. And I think those people who are able to do that beautifully are the ones who have a higher well-being score. The fourth factor is environmental mastery, and that includes the ability to choose or create environments that are suitable to your own mental conditions, right? So I mentioned earlier that I did some research with my dissertation with the State Bar of Arizona, and the research showed that the two important things. First, that there was a really significant positive relationship between attorneys' levels of environmental mastery and their psychological well-being. And secondly, that many lawyers had lower levels of environmental mastery. And what that means is, or what it meant to them was, for those who felt like they could control their destiny, their environment, where they were, how they worked in the context of other lawyers, they felt better about their work. Many people may know, or you may not know, lawyers oftentimes work in a culture that's adversarial. The nature of law practice is adversarial. And those who had who worked in those environments where they went to court more often, they fought against other lawyers, they had to work long hours, they actually had lower well-being scores because they didn't feel like they could change the context of their work. So if you don't feel like you can change your environment, it's less likely that you're going to feel good about where you are. That's not, sometimes people feel stuck. You know, if you feel stuck in your environment or stuck in a relationship or you know, just stuck in general in a situation, that can lead to not just stress but also depression, which is the opposite of feeling, I think, peaceful in your life.
Yeah, and I think this is where, you know, a lot of people feel like they're victims I think this is maybe what you're speaking to, is just having that approach to life that you are the victim of your environment. So I love this. I love that you can't just do one of these things. You know, you have to do them all, because otherwise you're going to have a void somewhere in your level of happiness that you're able to experience.
And it can be very simple too, like, you know, not liking where you live, right? Or not liking the work environment or the culture at your job. Not liking your furniture and how your space is situated. You know, just taking care of yourself in small ways, like your living environment, to larger ways, like where you work, is very important in really being true to yourself, right? These factors are intertwined. So if you're true to yourself and giving yourself what you need and accepting that, that the environment may be important to you in certain factors, and you give yourself that, they're all going to work together to increase your experience of being happier. The fifth factor is having purpose in life and experiencing yourself as being purposeful. So the belief that gives meaning to your life, you know, what is really important to you? Do you know your purpose? Do you feel a deeper connection in life to who you are and what you're doing and why you're here? This question of what is my purpose and feeling like I'm on purpose, I'm living life in a way that's really meaningful to me. I'm contributing to, you know, my family, my environment, to myself in a way that brings me peace and joy, is what's central to having a purpose in life. Viktor Frankl, in his Man's Search for Meaning, once said, if you understand who you are and where you fit in, that's your purpose. And it doesn't have to be any more complicated than that. So feeling a deeper connection in your life will help increase your experience of well-being. And then the sixth and final factor is personal growth. I consider myself a lifelong learner. I take classes all the time because I love growing. I love expanding who I am. The idea of getting older really excites me because I look at older people, you know, in their 70s and 80s, and quite often they have so much wisdom. So this idea of, you know, the ability to continue to grow and develop your potential and to expand who you are as a person is central to personal growth. And it's one of my favorite of the five factors, because I have a saying, I'm not getting older, I'm getting better. And that's exciting. And so and I think it's one of the challenges that we have in a culture that's so fixated on maintaining our youth. You know, we have an idea that getting older is bad. You know, we engage in all sorts of things to, quote unquote, stay young, as opposed to embracing this idea that, you know, as we focusing on growth and who we're becoming as opposed to how we look. Again, that's that internal versus external focus. If we focus on how our hair is graying or how we have wrinkles on our faces, we're externally focused. And there's this another opportunity to look at who we are and who we're being from a growth standpoint internally that gives us much more of an opportunity to not just expand, but to feel good about how we're aging and growing. The research on personal growth suggests that when we're in our place of power, growing and expanding who we're being, we experience greater joy. And the beauty is, it's never too late to get started. We can always grow from where we are right now. You said something earlier, Raj, about like the life and how, you know, it's about the growth, and any opportunity or anything that happens in our lives, we can look at it as a mistake or we can look at it as an opportunity for growth. That's central to what this sixth factor is all about. There's always an opportunity to look at anything that happens in your life as an opportunity for growth and to stretch who you're being. And looking at it that way, from that perspective, expands who we are. And that's why it contributes to our sense of well-being, because if we look at it as an opportunity to expand as opposed to a criticism, we get to feel better about it. I don't know if you've heard about the area of positive psychology. I think you have, haven't you, Raj?
Yes, I have.
Um, thankfully, probably in the last 30 to 40 years, this area of psychology, it's called positive psychology for our listeners who may not have heard of it, has really taken off. And what positive psychology studies is, you know, the attitudes, beliefs that help people thrive. And so what we've been talking about today is actually comes from the field of positive psychology research. And there's so many attitudes and beliefs that they've researched that contribute to people experiencing greater happiness and well-being. The six factors that we've identified today are just a few of those. There are a whole host of others. You know, there's research on meditation, on yoga, on spending time in nature, on creativity. And we've talked about some of those in our shows, you know, during the past several months, and we'll be talking about even more of them in the months to come. So we want to thank you for joining us on Living Life Powerfully today. Next week, we are so excited to begin part one of a 5-part series on health, focusing on our physical health. And we could probably do a 20-part series on physical health. But we're going to start tomorrow with physical health and go through not just physical health, but mental health, our sexual health, our emotional health, and so on. But between now and then, if you'd like to reach us, please feel free to email us at pearlrajradio@gmail.com. That's pearlraj radio@gmail.com. And between now and then, remember to be true to yourself and to be powerful.
So long.